what happens if the West Antarctic ice sheet does collapse and the Greenland ice sheet, which more and more scientists say is potentially imminent, where 12 feet of water, you know, they'll raise sea levels by 12 feet and put a third of Florida underwater. This is, you know, this is not a joke. This is a serious issue. This is not alarmism. It is seriously something that is virtually certain to happen.
Kennedy challenged the dogma that fossil fuels are an economically inexpensive way to get energy and that renewables are more expensive. He said that if the system of corporate welfare ended, where the government gives handouts to the fossil fuel industry, and if the free market were truly at work, oil would be one of the most expensive sources of energy.
$17 billion a year in direct federal subsidies to the oil industry, almost $1 trillion, $834 billion a year in indirect subsidies, like protecting $100 million we spend every year protecting the oil lines in the Mideast and escorting ships back and forth, tankers back and forth. Plus, and that doesn't even count the $130 million we're now spending in Iraq, which should be billed to that account. If we were paying the true cost of oil at the pump, we would be paying about $13 per gallon. And, of course, they couldn't compete against that, against biofuels and all these other alternatives that are now available.
One example of a cheap alternative energy that Kennedy cited is thin-film solar. He said that green technologies make good business sense.
A thin-film solar that looks like saran wrap that they wrap around a building and it can power the building, within 5 years they'll be producing energy at 4 cents a kilowatt, which is cheaper than coal. You know, this stuff is out there. These people understand that the transformation away from a carbon economy is going to happen not through government intervention, but from business logic, because it makes business sense. There is gold in green development and in green innovation.
Kennedy railed against the revolving door where lobbyists for the most polluting industries have taken key regulatory and environmental positions within the Bush administration and then got rehired by those industries after key laws got passed. He also passionately spoke out against strip mining for coal, a process where entire mountaintops are removed and entire valleys are filled in, destroying the environment and the local economy.
When my father was fighting strip mining in Appalachia back in the 60s, I remember a conversation that I had with him when I was 14 years old, where he said to me, they're not just destroying the environment, they are permanently impoverishing these communities, because you cannot, they'll never be able to regenerate an economy from these barren moonscapes that are left behind. And he said to me, they're doing it so they can break the unions. And that's exactly what happened. When he told me that, there were 140,000 unionized mine workers in West Virginia digging coal out of tunnels in the ground. Today, there are fewer than 11,000 miners left in the state taking the exact same amount of coal out as they were in 1968.
Earlier in the day, there was a panel discussion on transportation and land use efficiency. Douglas Foy is the president of DIF Enterprises and a policy advisor for the Pew Center on the States. He pointed out that the best communities were the ones that had great transit systems and therefore the fewest VMT, or vehicle miles traveled. New York City tops the list, but the second best transit system in the country, according to Foy, is Walt Disney World.
Disney World, one of the most popular tourist attractions in all of the world, is built around the premise of pedestrian friendliness. You cannot drive in Disney World. It is designed to be like a traditional American town. Everyone can walk. Everyone has pedestrian facilities. Those who are disabled have appropriate options. It is entirely car-free. What's wrong with us that we aren't building communities like that again? That's the key here. Not Disney World, but New York, Nantucket, South Beach. The great American communities are the solution to this VMT problem, and that's where we have to go back.
Because of our urban sprawl, Florida is tied with Southern California for the most auto-dependent region in the country, according to Nick Bowman, who is senior fellow with the Center for Urban and Environmental Solutions at Florida Atlantic University.
Florida, in the South Florida region, there are about 30 annual trips per capita on transit, on bus or rail transit. In Tampa, St. Pete, in Orlando, that's about 10 trips per capita annually. In New York City, which is the most energy efficient transportation region in the country, that's 165 trips per capita annually. We lag far behind. We actually are tied with Southern California as the most automobile-dependent, sprawl-dependent community in the country, and we need to change that.
The Climate Change Summit concludes tomorrow. You can watch the live video stream at myfloridaclimate.com. For WMNF News, I'm Sean Canan.